After a long day of being pulled in every direction, the last thing anyone wants to think about is, what's for dinner? That's where Schwan's can help, with a variety of real food choices, frozen to lock in freshness. From ready-made meals, premium meats and side dishes, to vegetables, ice cream, and more. Schwan's foods go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours, so you can pull off a delicious meal in no time at all. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. To help simplify mealtime, visit Schwan's.com.
Want to rise above what holds you back? These are the stories of those fighting that battle. It might also be the story of you. I'm Dan Waldschmidt, author of Edgy Conversations and strategist of billion-dollar companies all over the world. This is Mark Menard, author of The Story of You, the guy who knows a thing or two about never giving up. You're listening to Elevating Beyond. Let's get started.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Elevating Beyond with a two-word mission statement, change lives. And look, as you notice, I'm not in the studio today.
Hey.
I have the honor of, I've been bothering this guy one, if you haven't recognized right here, I have next to the left of me, I know him as E.T.
E.T.
It's Dr. E.
It's E.T. And only doctor when I'm as a gig and I need to use my credentials.
And the one and only, and the soon-to-be New York Times best-selling author, Mama T, Vernessa Thomas. I had to say it so I could prove I wouldn't
mess
butcher.
Around. Right.
But seriously, everyone, this is really special because for all the listeners and everyone watching, as this has grown, I know a lot of people have heard your story, but it's so easy to assume that everyone has, so if you just want to kind of give them where it started from and we can kind of take them along the journey that
I don't know where it started from because I was in the womb, but
that's
usually,
we'll start.
Yeah, right. I usually like to start at 16 because I just feel like, you know, as an adult, I look back and that was my personal journey. You know, you have your parents who raise you and they have their dreams and their goals for you. But most kids is probably 18 because they graduate from high school, they go to college. So that's kind of where their journey starts. But my journey started at 16, you know, leaving home and being homeless at 16. So it's kind of like that was my growth period where it's like, okay, it's not a mom, it's not a dad. You're your mom, you're your dad, like you're your adult, like you're out here by yourself and you got to make it happen. So I think 16 years old is kind of like where the journey started for me.
And having mom here, and I'm in between them in case this joke and there's a lot of love here. But
get your box. You should have a rep out there.
Mark's gonna get ready for you. Sierra.
Yeah. You're on my side.
We have that type of podcast where we pull people in. But with having teenagers myself now and also being through my own adversity, I can, not from a mom's point of view,
right,
though,
right.
I know from a dad's point of view, I've had some close calls where I was like to my son, but I knew he would come back in like 2 hours.
Right.
It's because where we live is different than like, in, you know, than Detroit, honestly, you know, it's different than where I grew up. But to let everyone know, from what I know from talking to you, it was, you got in trouble, you threw one party too many.
I never heard it like that before, Mark. I like that. That's why I'm not a promoter.
And your stepdad that you were raised thinking was your dad for a while, we could get into that too, but finally it was like, I think you cussed him out or something. And, you know, throwing the beep words, I know you won't be dropping F-bombs on here. But teenagers, and you were like his mom, like, there's a lot about respect that I do think is important. And that's a tough lesson, but when he walked out that door, I know in the moment, like, you're, all right, if you do that, you can't come back. Now, what was it like after that for the next?
Well, I never said he couldn't come back, but he declared that he wouldn't. He had had enough. It was, I think I went in shock first because I hoped that what he said he didn't mean, and he was very angry. But after a while, in order to have some sense of sanity, I had to reflect on what I had done as a parent and what his adopted father had done as a parent, and said, for the first time, I think, I thought this, that most parents don't raise their kids like the animal kingdom, which prepares them for life. We love them. I had a lot of angst growing up, 1 to 14. It was poverty, it was a lot of ignorance, and not ignorant, but ignorance about life.
Sure.
So I had kept some of the gifts that had been bestowed on me, being 1 to 14, but more open-minded to expose my kid. So in my heart of hearts, I knew he had what he needed to survive.
Mm.
My heart of hearts did not want to see my son leave.
Sure.
But I did not believe that he would sell drugs or go kill someone. But even when they're ready to go off to college, it's that same anxiety. Get away from you.
Yeah, where they could actually
get into it.
Yeah.
Based on their friends.
Yeah.
They have a lot of sway.
So, yeah. Your friends, how going off of that, and just real quickly too, because from your perspective, did you know, like, during the times when he was homeless for that period, had you heard that from anyone, or?
Well, I reached out to a couple kids on the block, but they protected him in the earlier time. But once he left, he was with a group of kids that I didn't know.
Gotcha.
But later, I heard that, you know, even though they were bad, if you will, by the sense of selling drugs and a lot of things, they never pulled Eric in to what they were doing. And that helped, because back in 70 or 88, it was a serious drug problem in Detroit. The gangs were out of control, and they were the big drug pushers.
Yeah, Detroit and Philly.
Yeah,
it was a real deal right there.
The thing that worried me, Eric has that personality where he could have been top of all of that. He'd have been a natural leader no matter where he went.
Could have been the kingpin.
Right? He could have. He had the personality to do it.
Yeah.
And I pray that he would never go over to that side, because he'd have been successful at it.
It's interesting that how amazing God, because he could have. Because obviously, I was actually doing pretty well, unfortunately, making a lot of money, living that life till I woke up in jail, thank God. But like you were angry though, but you were staying away from, you didn't turn towards the drugs and everything, but you turned away from the life of living at home.
Absolutely.
And were just, you know, read his book if you haven't read. Here, he even has his mom holding it on the cover.
Yeah,
I love that little double promo.
Yeah.
But Secret to Success, you know, get the whole story, listen to an Audible. But as you went through that, then I'm moving forward now, like a lot, went through your whole transformation, which always happens overnight, right? Overnight success,
right? 10 years overnight, right?
Yeah.
Right.
It's taken me 12 to become.
Yeah.
Yeah, so after becoming a 10-year overnight success, you and your mom started to have a relationship throughout that, but you'd be speaking, and I mean, and you mentioned God before too. I was kind of, did you raise, like, because I know you talk about going to the church and that pastor that spoke into you.
Yeah.
Did you raise, like, talk about God in your house much?
Oh, we talked a little bit, but we didn't, we visit church, but we weren't what you call went to church regularly. Mm-hmm. But we were raised with the Bible principle.
Okay.
My great-grandmother especially taught us, you know, about faith and honor and all of those principles. So that helped.
Yeah. Okay. So then over time, now you're a successful author. You're all over the place. Go to YouTube, type in Eric Thomas. He's everywhere, working hard, doing so much. For you, like from the parent side, then there's, okay, now I went from homeless. I've got my high school, my GED, my high school degree, which is a huge accomplishment. And then college degree, which is like no one around me. I know where I live, my two roommates, which unfortunately aren't alive any longer, were like calling me a sellout when I said I was going to go to college. Like people like us don't go to school. And so like it's those levels, those steps, but then doctor now, speaking all over, how did that, like I'm always curious about this, affect your faith at a point to see that Eric was be talking about, because you're open about God all the time. And to be like, I'm doing this, Mom, and you're like, but you have this great job, you have a master's degree, you're teaching, you're a worried parent.
Well, because of the era I'm from, baby boomer, we were tried and true. You get a job, you're in it for your 30 years and a gold watch and a pension. And so that structure and that idea that every month you got an income. And then my grandson had asthma and he needed good insurance. So from a practical point of view, and then my father was a product of the Great Depression.
Yeah.
I had a totally different mindset.
Sure.
Structure, they're going to take care of you, which they don't anymore anyway. But at that time, I thought, take the sure thing, not the take a chance.
And when you say, to be honest, I mean, there's a lot of people that still don't understand that. And to be honest, let's be really honest, it is taking a chance.
Yeah, of course.
Because I started my company in the recession. It's because people, you know, you see on Instagram and everything, people see this like right now. Mm-hmm. And they're like, I want to be, Mark has a business. Yeah. Now he's with Eric Thomas and visiting with him. And it's a chance. They don't see the nights of the tears of my wife and I when I had to have $20,000 to meet payroll for all my team. We put our mortgage to make sure everyone gets paid. They don't see those, like, literal tears. I spent a lot of nights, like, crying to God in my office.
Yeah, no question.
I can imagine.
But it was, like, because you talk about God a lot, that's what would kind of continue to come. My why would connect to other things, but I'd continue to feel this pulling. Yeah. And I'd be like, okay, God, like, even with this and speaking, I dropped speech class.
Right.
When I was doing good with, and I'm not trying to make this about me, I'm just trying to.
Absolutely.
Like, we serve special needs. I'm growing, it's still growing a lot, and he showed me speaking, and I'm like, come on, like, you got the wrong guy.
Yeah, that's right.
See,
absolutely.
You said it. I didn't have Eric's vision, and he didn't ask me what to do. He asked my opinion, and I did say later, even before he took me to Australia, that I'm so glad he didn't listen because it wasn't my dream, and I could only give advice based on my own experiences, and I didn't know anybody that was an entrepreneur except maybe the insurance man, and they were worrisome. They would come to your house every week, so I couldn't give him real advice because I had not had that in my experience. Yeah.
And I think, and I'm not insurance, whatever you do is great, but I think there's a different type when you do something that's never been done before.
Absolutely.
It's like a whole other type of,
absolutely,
because you can follow it, like you can get a franchise, and I have the utmost respect, like my good man Greg Walker owns a bunch. But he says, he's like, it's not the same. I didn't start it from scratch.
Because
also, you didn't know the how.
Yeah.
You're like, Mom, I have this.
Yeah.
What was your first, what was that conversation like? Like, what were you telling her?
Well, you know, what's weird about the conversation is, you know, it's, you know what you want to do. I think it's almost like a cosine thing. You're looking for a cosine, you know, but it's like, you already know what you want to do. But for me, I think what was is a struggle, because even when you talk about me being in the streets, it's always, I'm going to do what I think I want to do, but I also was raised a certain way, so I do have some principles. So I'm trying to, it's that dichotomy. I'm trying to do, you know, both at once, you know, so it's not like if my mom tells me she doesn't like it that I'm going to stop doing it. you know, but I'm hoping that, you know, for the sake of, you know, like energy, one accordness, unity, I'm hoping I'm going to say it and she's going to be like straight, you know, so that way I don't have to deal with maybe any of the negative, you know, because for real, if somebody you love says no, you know, you kind of carry that thing a little bit.
Yeah.
It's like that negative energy, like, man, they don't, you know what I'm saying? But actually that negative energy was great. Because,
yeah,
because part of the test and part of saying, all right, cool, I have to now prove to everybody, and not in a bad way.
No.
Like, I have to prove that this thing works. So, because I know if it works, you're not going to be negative. Like, you're not negative for negative sake. You're negative because you really feel like it may not work, you know? So, for me, it was like, all right, good, I feel you. I'm even grateful that you talked about the stability part, because I do need to get insurance for my son, and I do need to get insurance for my wife. And I remember getting insurance and feeling like, yo, I really made it. Because when I was getting the checks, that was cool. But once I got the insurance, my wife and my mother, it was like, oh, it's my mother-in-law. They all was like, it's real now. You got insurance. So
you want, and everyone listening and watching, it's okay to want, we're all human beings.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because in people that have seen your stuff, like you're up there, you're yelling, it's grind, and all, which is true.
Yeah.
But you go through the fear, you go through the doubt,
absolutely.
We go through it, but also you, because people ask, like, how do I really find that, and I know there's different, like, techniques to give, but it's kind of like, I don't know how to tell, you have to have, keep going, and anyone, like, I was in jail, you were home, like, the fact that we're all sitting right here is proof that there's a lot of people smarter than me that can do this.
Yeah.
But you have to go through your mom or your dad. My parents were worried about me.
Yeah.
And I remember at a point, I'm like, I love you to death. For a while, when we talk, we can't talk anymore about my company.
Because
it was the recession.
Yeah.
And they'd be like, did you watch the news?
Yeah, no question.
What if this happens?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, man, I wasn't. Oh, geez.
I never thought about that. I never thought that far. You know, somebody asked me yesterday, they said to me, E, how do you know, like, legitimately, like, your parents said no? You know, your pastor might have said no. You know, your wife or husband said no. Like, how do you know when to quit? You know, because they was like, yo, I, this is what I think I'm called to do. But, like, at what point do I abandon this because I'm not seeing the results?
Mm.
And I said to that individual, there's one thing I can tell you, no matter what has happened to me as it relates to this gift or this ministry, whatever you want to call it, a calling, that my heart was always in it.
Yeah.
And so I said, once your heart is out of it, then you need to get out of it. You know, so but if it's just you don't have no money, but your heart is still in it, you feel it like this is, you know, so for me, I'm homeless, high school dropout, whatever, college, got kicked out of college on academic probation, took 12 years. My heart was never like, I don't want to finish school. Like, even though I had, okay, I got this challenge, then once I took school serious and was killing it, then I had a financial challenge, and I didn't have money for school, you know? So it was like, hey, E, but my heart never said, I'm out, I don't want to do this. So I think as long as your heart is in it and you're able to put forth that 120% effort and passion, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah, and I feel like sometimes, like, when I always say never give up. Like, I've thrown in the towel a lot, and God's like, pick it back up, dude.
Yeah,
wake yourself up.
Yeah.
Like, all right, I'll wake up and start again. But then I'll get, like, something from someone. It may be an email or something that right at the right time, too, that just reminds me. It's not even money.
Yeah.
It'll be an email that'll come, and they'll be like, I was going through a really dark time. And I was listening to your show lately, because I'm so busy with my other companies. I was thinking for a while, I don't know if I want to
keep doing
it.
This, yeah.
And I get that email, and then that's where God's like, it's not about you.
That's it.
Like, it's not about, you don't get to give up.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, you don't get to give up. I like that.
You can use that.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I don't get to give up.
You don't. But what I love about this, like, the ripple effect is, what people don't see is now, look, because of that, and there's been a long process there, you see it, it takes time, all of a sudden your beliefs start to change.
Yes.
Because people say, what can I do for my friends, my family that don't want to change. Mm-hmm. And I know I had to, like, unfortunately, they're both dead. And I always say the best thing you can do is with love, be the best you.
Mm-hmm.
And they might not tell you, it might take decades, but the light shining through you, like my dad admitted, it made it 10 years later.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, I was worried all the time. He said, my faith in God is stronger
mm-hmm.
because of you.
See.
And I see this now.
Well,
and you have a
when
book.
I saw that our relationship was healthy, it was stuttering, peter out, and a lot of it was my values. Like, to me, he was disrespectful because I'm old and you know the rules.
Yeah.
But what I learned later was we don't always see the other person's perspective because we're so into what we think is best that we've got our tunnel vision going. But Eric was going to Bermuda one time. This was early in his career.
Yeah.
And he called and said, Mom, do you have a passport? And I said, yeah, you know, I got one. Why? And he said, I'm going to Bermuda to speak to the school system, and I want you to speak to the parents. I'm like, he got to be joking. You want me to speak to the parents, I said?
That's cool.
And it touched my heart because Eric knew that I have a kind of a tough love approach and that do you want me to really talk to these parents and tell them what to do or what they're doing wrong? And, of course, when I first came, they were really upset. But as we talked about what you had a woman who had a 32-year-old who's still fussing about cleaning up his room.
How old?
32, still at home.
Oh.
And I said, you can learn something from the animal kingdom. Because if you are a cat, they're going to tell you, eat the bird. How to catch the bird. If you're
yeah.
a bird, they're going to tell you how to avoid the cat.
Sure.
But as parents, we sure. love our kids so much, some of us. We don't raise them or we enable.
Yeah.
And that I understood that Eric was upset. Because his friends were all enabled kids. They had everything. But the parents didn't have structure and they didn't have rules.
Oh.
And so who wouldn't want to be like this kid? Or instead of a kid got to shovel snow when the father's out there doing it or the kids didn't. One kid was in fifth grade, his parents still tying his shoes because they loved him. He wasn't special. They were just, honey, let me tie your shoes.
Yeah.
No, and then I'm telling him he'll pull up weeds in the yard.
Can I get my shoes tied? I'm just trying to get my shoes tied, Mark.
Well, and at the time, and to be honest, there's no, we all do our best
yeah.
with what we have, and we can always learn more and be
mm-hmm.
better versions. I'm not going to sit here right now and say I haven't screwed up at times with my
we
kids, but I'm always learning to be better.
And if you're open-minded, but if you're doing, like, okay, I'm going to give an example. I'm number 4 out of 14. My youngest sister is about 8 weeks younger than Eric. And so for my sisters, some enabled their kids to a fault, and they're smart, but they're not doing anything because we didn't get a lot of physical love. But how can you? You have 14 kids. But they said, well, we're going to do everything that Mom didn't do. But they got a different set of serious problems. And they blame her still some kind of way, and I don't know how they do it. Or, like me, I took some of what my mother did and kept.
Yeah.
Some I flipped over because they were like, if she went left, I'm going right.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to have an open mind, and then sometimes you got to get off the block, because if you don't get off the block, how do you know?
That's so true. It's like, it takes a village to raise a child, but then it takes the child leaving that village,
right.
I really think, to become
right.
a man.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Yeah, I don't see any movies where the kid stayed in the village.
Yeah.
Like, not even Lion King.
Right.
You know, like, they don't stay in the village
right.
and then become. It's like they
yeah.
do have to leave the
right.
village and go through, you know, whatever their metamorphosis is,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever, you know, find their sensei,
mm-hmm.
you
yeah.
know, go through their process, and then they're able to come back to the village and able to build a village. And I think, Mark, that's the tough part, is because a lot of people, you know, for real, we don't want them to leave the village because we're not sure what happens when they leave the village. You know, like we don't, we can't control them as much mm-hmm. when they yeah. leave the village. You know, and some kids for real don't come home from the village. So we're constantly like, you know, whoa, a little bit afraid, you know, but you got to get to that point where you're like, yo, this is the process. So you can't usurp that authority. Like you can't mess the process up. And I think, you know, for myself and for friends of mine that know that our success was like, we had to do our, and everybody's is different, but mine was homeless. And, you know, I feel one of the things that makes me a phenomenal speaker is my humility, you know, is that I'm not arrogant. But it was homelessness that really broke me. It was homelessness that really taught me, okay, this is where you really are, and this is where you think you are. You know, this is who you think you are, this is who you really are. And so it was during that time frame, you know, I got to speak to Eric alone. Like, and a lot of people don't ever get to be alone. You know, I looked at my daughter, she's a different child when my son left, you know, and there were some things about her that I didn't even know when my son was there, you know, because the two of them were kind of together. So I never really saw her. It was like the two of them. Mm-hmm. So once he left, I was like, oh, I didn't even realize that you had this challenge or this challenge or this challenge because you lived in your brother's shadow. So I was fortunate when I was homeless, like I got to talk to Eric. I got to find out what my strengths were, what my weaknesses were. Mm-hmm. And then as an adult, I got to choose, do you want to fix this? You know, do you want to repair this? Do you want to take care of this? Do you want to wait for another 5 years to like get to this because it's too tough? And so I think that's what makes that metamorphosis process so important, is your authentic self comes out when you go through that particular process.
Yeah, yeah. And you talk about going through that process, that metamorphosis, and it's, that's the hardest part.
Yeah.
But it's a lot easier to just, it's so much easier to stay, and people are giving advice from the best knowledge that we have, and then kind of like going into some of the forgiveness part on both ends. You know, I was going to ask that, right? That's why I'm sitting in the middle.
Well, I'll start.
It's a beautiful thing, though.
And my mom said something that was, you know, that was deep to me once, but I think for me, when you're going to church every week, like 2-3 times a week, like I was in college, it was a, you know, a theologian, you know, a seminary, if you will, to some extent, you know, and so when you're going before, you know, these great messages, it's pricking your heart, you know what I'm saying? You're hearing them talk about, you know, the love of Christ, God forgave his only, you know, forgave us, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, we should have everlasting life, you know, and you're seeing these skits and you're hearing all these songs, right? And what it's doing is, as callous or cold as I might have been, it's like every week it's chipping it, you know, it's chipping it, you know, it's chipping it to the point where it's like, okay, now you got to do something about what you're hearing. Like, you just can't hear, like, who goes grocery shopping and doesn't buy anything, you know? And so it's like, you're listening, now you got to do something. And so
I think we're accountable.
Yeah.
Because that was a good, I believe we're held responsible for what we know.
Absolutely.
It's like at a certain point, now you know this, you don't have an excuse to keep
doing
it.
Yeah, because because before when I was angry, I was not being held accountable for my thoughts. Like, these are my thoughts. Like, you know, and when you are not going before somebody else, it's like, oh, these are my thoughts. And actually they feel like, I feel justified. Like, I'm not even thinking about my thoughts, to be honest.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking a certain way and I'm not thinking about how I'm thinking. I'm just thinking that way.
Yeah.
When you start going to church, you start listening to the praise team or choir or whatever, you start hearing what they're saying and then you start adding that or measuring that to what you're thinking. And it's like, whoa, that's not like, whoa, I'm coming to church and loving church. But the basis of it is forgiveness. Mm-hmm. That's what the core message is. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son. So whosoever believe in him, you know, they should have everlasting life. He's forgiving you for what you've done.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa, you're saying, like, not only you're hearing it, you're now going out and speaking it, but you're not doing what you're saying. You know, and you have to do what you say if it's going to have power. That's the difference between theory and practice.
Yeah.
You know, theory, you can hear it, but practice means you're actually taking what you're learning and you're doing something. But to be honest, long before my mom, I had to take personal responsibility. Like, before, I feel like before you can really forgive somebody, you got to forgive yourself.
Yeah.
And so for me, it was like, yo, E, you were homeless. Like, you did that to yourself. Like, you didn't have to do that. E, you came to college, because now I'm in college now.
Yeah.
And so the mistakes I'm making on the streets, the mistakes I'm making in college have nothing to do at home. Like, and I'm still making mistakes. So I used to think, well, if I leave the house at 16, then I'm good. But I still had the same problem. And so I tell people all the time, this is how you know you need to change. No matter what environment you're in, I don't care who you're dealing with, if you're seeing some of the same problems, I don't care if it's the same job, it's relationships, if you keep seeing it and you in it and the other person's not, that you said was the problem and they're not in it, but you're still having the same, so it's like, okay, E, you're still having some of the same challenges, you're still forgetting stuff, you know what I'm saying, you're still not being responsible, you're still procrastinating, all right, you're going to have to forgive you because you've let you down. And then once I was able to deal with Eric and say, okay, Eric, now you need to go back to college, like, because you messed up, or you need to do this, or you need to do that. At that point, then I was able to say, all right, who else do I need to forgive? All right. And for me, forgiveness is not, I hear a lot of people say, you know, forgiveness has, I got to forgive that person. To me, I don't really buy into that. Like, if somebody dies and you didn't get a chance to talk to them, like, your whole life can't be held up because they're gone.
Yeah.
I just feel like if that person's alive, you can go talk to them. You can talk to them about your process of forgiveness, like, in your mind, what that means to you.
Yeah.
You understand what I'm saying?
You can write a letter, like, yeah. I think you talked about before, yeah. Right? Write a letter, even, and get it out, and... Yeah. Read it at the grave.
For you, though. That's what I'm saying.
It's like it's
therapy for you. So yeah. When you say, I got to forgive you. No, I don't have to forgive you as the human. I have to forgive you in terms of my perspective and my mind and how I perceived what I was going through. Because I had a lady tell me the other day, I spoke, and she was like, I want to talk to you. And I didn't even know. I was like, okay, what you want to talk about? She's like, well, we need to talk. And then she had a stern look on her face after a presentation. And I was like, okay, I'm confused. She's like, I have aught with you. And I was like, aught? I was like, do I know you? I was like, I don't know. You can't have aught with somebody that you don't know. She said, I have aught with you. I said, aught? I don't even know you. It's not possible for you to have aught with me when I don't know you. She's like, well, you said some stuff that, you know, I debate. I said, you can't debate my testimony. This is my life. I'm telling you my experience. You can't debate my experience. So I think when people say I have to forgive, sometimes they take that the wrong way. So for me, it just means... Yo, the how I perceived it, what I thought, what I was going through, because I wasn't like sexually abused or physically abused. So I'm not, you know, if somebody does that to you, that's one thing. That didn't happen to me. But I had to forgive myself, and then I had to forgive my concept of what I thought, what my expectations were. Like, you didn't meet my expectations. You didn't do the stuff that I thought you should do. And I need to let that go. And then I need to move on in terms of our relationship from this point forward. Clearing the expectations up, knowing, oh, okay, what do you expect? What do I expect? Okay, we're going to move from here, and then I'll never get angry with you. Why? Because I don't have no expectations. Like, you can't get mad at somebody when you don't have expectations, and I don't mean, like, you lower your standards.
No.
I just mean I don't put what I think you should be doing on you, and you don't put what you think I should be doing on you. We just determine what this relationship should look like, and then we move from that point forward.
And you're not dragging the weight around
Absolutely.
All the time, so
yeah.
You're doing your other stuff, yeah. And it's like an elevator. You can't go to that next
Absolutely.
Level because that weight's holding
Absolutely.
You down,
mm-hmm.
And that's kind of where it is for you. You
yeah.
let it go
yeah.
because it's amazing that it's worked out this way.
Oh,
but I've seen
sense.
Other cases where people
yeah.
have to forgive,
yeah.
and their dad's on death row or
yeah.
something,
oh,
and
no question. Yeah.
they can't even talk
yeah.
anymore.
That's right.
But
that's right.
It was still for them.
Yeah.
Like, I let it go. I've given
yeah.
it to whatever they believe in.
Yeah.
A lot of, usually it's, I let it go to God, and I've
yeah.
never not, I don't have aught with that because I've never not seen someone that has
yeah.
flourished themselves.
Oh, right afterwards.
From doing
yeah.
that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, one of the things that Eric talked about getting pricked by going to church, it was, again, was the opposite for me. Not the church part, but I had so many people that came to me to, you know, Eric was ungrateful. He was, you did everything for him. And I had to tell him, look, the problem I'm having with my son, his father don't have that problem. He was never in the midst of it, even though they had the confrontation. His heart was fine. He said, I was a good father. Eric's going through his go-through. I'm not upset. Whereas I was upset, and I suppose in the early beginning, my family, especially on both sides, kind of knew about the drama. But I had to say, don't come to me no more. I don't want to hear your opinion because I'm stressed out. And they were working, not deliberately, but you can actually make someone hate someone when you're constantly bringing up negativity. So I had to quit talking to people, but I internalized it. But then I had the sense to get therapy. So people come to this, come to a medium point their own way. But you do have to come to something, even if it's just letting go and said, you know what happened, happened. But it was very difficult, people choosing sides. And I was, I literally had to just remove myself from that because I didn't want to lose my son. And even though we had problems, and it was in therapy that I realized that my perception as a parent, and that's what I really speak about in the book, is not their perspective. And that you do what you think as a loving parent, and you do things that you know are going to bring them to a better place when they're adults. But when you have these secrets, and they find out, and they always do. That, and then the secret that people have are, it's like 10 levels deep. It's never, you know something about me. It's that you know something about me, but you know something else that I don't know, that this one knows and don't. And I'm telling you, getting rid of secrets, and there's a difference between private, personal, and secret. Some things are personal that do not need to be shared, but a secret is always negative because you're withholding something that will potentially harm someone with them not having the knowledge. And it was in the therapy that I started to see I could understand his view because I had done some things as a parent to expose him to certain situations but not told the whole truth about it and not knowing that the other parties would share something with him. But then as Eric, loyalty wouldn't share that he knew certain things because he didn't want to hurt me. So it was just a mess that didn't have to happen. And so it's a cautionary tale.
Well, it's like the beautiful struggle though, because again, I'm looking at, we're all sitting here now, and you, it could have been easier for when it started being, okay, I'm not gonna put that in the book. I know it's gonna upset, I'm not, but you know how many millions of lives have been helped through from both perspectives that have been going through something like that. And that's again where it's like, it's not about you. It's always the harder thing.
Right.
But you were upset. Didn't at one point, like you tell Eric, like you were upset at him for throwing you all your information out there?
Oh yeah, I was real salty. But when he told me the book was already published, he mentioned it. Okay, then I'm gonna use that term. He mentioned it. And of course I was. Because it had gotten out all the things that had happened with the three families involved.
Yeah.
But it was only years after that there more stuff came out. But I was working corporate America.
Yeah.
I left Chicago when I married. Came here. It was like a do-over. People knew who needed to know if I met a young girl with a baby.
Oh,
I had people that I always, you know, went out to and supported. We owned property, a two flat. We always ran into single moms. And someone helped me. But I was not telling it openly. I just had my crew. And now I know who followed Eric. He's very popular. And who's going to know at Ford Motor Company that I'm working with every day? And I go, girl, did you hear her? It's like, you know, if I'm a baby boomer again. We were raised to be private.
Yeah.
And that was a double-edged sword because that privacy secretness harmful as well.
This is Julie.
Hey, calendar. What's my morning like?
Julie's about to have a long day.
At 9 a.m., soccer carpool. 9:10, purchase birthday card. 905, dry cleaning.
Did you just go backwards?
I'm sorry, I can't fit that question into your schedule. 915, cry for a little bit.
For days that won't end, let Schwann's help. With Schwann's, you can get delicious meals that go from freezer to table in minutes, not hours. Ordered, delivered, done. That's homemade easy. Visit today at Schwann's.com.
And now, an ad from Dad.
All right, save money on car insurance when you bundle home and auto with Progressive.
Can I take these off?
All right.
What is this? This looks good.
Wow. That's well made. Where did you get this? I'm talking to you with the hair. Yeah, where did you get this? It's good stuff. That's solid. That's not veneer. That's solid stuff.
Progressive can't save you from becoming your parents, but we can save you money when you bundle home and auto. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company, affiliates, and other insurers. Discounts not available in all states or situations.